Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Monsters Among Us, a Filipino-Asian true crime podcast hosted by me, Chachi. First of all, I would like to apologize if during the whole duration of this podcast, you hear chickens, dogs, and even talkative cats in the background. I am currently recording at home and I don't have any studio, so please bear with my beautiful nature background music. I would also like to apologize for those who are waiting for the pilot episode of this podcast. To be honest, right after I posted the trailer of this podcast, I already researched and prepared the case for the first episode. And I was actually trying to record so I can post a week or two after. But then, there are a lot of construction going on in our neighborhood, so I wasn't really able to record peacefully. And then I got busy, and then it was our house's turn for renovation, and it took months. And during the renovation, we just relocated to the lot beside our house, so it's really noisy during the day. And because of that, obviously, I wasn't able to record. I think I posted a trailer in February of this year, and it's already October, and I'm really sorry because I just got really busy because I also have a 9-to-5 job during weekdays, so I only have weekends to fully rest. But I met with some friends last August, and they were asking me why I didn't post anything after the trailer, so I promised myself that I'll be diligent in updating this podcast once I posted the first episode. So here we are. So before I jump into the case, I just want to tell you about my thought process when I decided to create this podcast. So when the pandemic started, there has been a major change in the working ways of most of the companies because everybody was trying to limit the spread of the virus. Thus, most of the companies went to a work-from-home setup. And our industry is among those who decided to shift to a work-from-home setup. As a Gemini and an ENFP, I thrive in social connections. So I became quite lonely during the first few months of the setup. So I was like, why not search for interesting podcasts just so I can feel that I'm with people when I'm working? So I remember asking for suggestions of interesting podcasts, and a friend recommended My Favorite Murder by Georgia Hardstark and Karen Kilgariff. Shout out to my favorite podcasters. This might not reach you, but just in case, hello. The reason that friend recommended My Favorite Murder is that I mentioned to her that I'm quite fascinated with the Ted Bundy case and his fucked up mind, and the fact that he was able to live a double life for so long. That triggered my fascination with the human mind, especially the minds of what we call serial killers. I'm so fascinated with the fact that they look like us and act like us most of the time, of course because they are humans, but they definitely think differently. Like, is that even possible? So she was like, if you want to listen to an interesting podcast, then listen to My Favorite Murder. So I did. I was a newbie in the true crime world when I started listening to them. I actually binge listened to every episode from the first to the latest during the pandemic. Georgia and Karen became my new office mates, basically. And every time, I was just so mind blown that a person like Ted Bundy isn't alone. That there are a lot of gruesome events that happened during these years. So I learned every well-known serial killer from that podcast. And, you know, getting into true crime is like getting into a black hole. There's no turning back. So I also looked up other podcasts that discuss similar cases. And that's when I realized that most of these podcasts are mostly Western-centric, at least those that I know of. There might be some that discusses cases from the East and Asia, specifically from time to time, but I know everyone will agree that most of the well-known killers and crime cases are usually from the US or from Europe and less from Asia. So that's when I thought, why not create a podcast that focuses solely on the cases that happened in Asia? The reason is I want to provide an awareness of on these cases that these crimes can happen anywhere in the world, and also specifically give the victims a platform. More than the perpetrators, as much as possible, I want to remember the victims of these heinous crimes and make this some kind of memorial for them because they deserve to be remembered. So yeah, here we are on our first episode of Monsters Among Us. And since this is the pilot episode, I've prepared something special. So if you already listened to the trailer, you know I mentioned the likes of Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer and Richard Ramirez as monsters among us. But these monsters, as I mentioned, are located on the western part of the world. So for the first episode, I'll be talking about this first monster. I'm making it a question because at the end of this episode, it's up to you to decide if this person is a monster or not. And since I'm from the Philippines, might as well start this podcast with a case from my very own country. My sources are on the notes of this podcast, so if you want to read on it, I suggest you click on the links and see for yourself. I picked this first case because I remember the article I read from Esquire that tackles the reasons why there are no serial killers in the Philippines. One, because of the chismosa culture. Chismosa are what we call nosy neighbors who are just super interested in everybody else's business. There are a lot of them here that we even have a character dedicated for them. We call these nosy neighbors Marites, just like how the Americans have Karens as a name for rude white women. But here, the Marites are not really rude, but more of just nosy people. So when you have a Marites as a neighbor, that person will probably know everything about you. So according to the article, because of this chismosa culture, nobody can hide, even a serial killer. After the first kill, they're already arrested, all thanks to Marites. Another reason is we don't have basements here or any place to hide the body. No place to hide the body means it's harder to commit crimes. Also, the houses here in the Philippines are very close to each other, as in houses are side by side. So mostly you can hear if someone screams from your neighbor's house. Of course, it's a different case if you're in an affluent neighborhood, but yeah, basements are not a trend in the Philippines. Third reason is that we are all busy trying to survive, so we can't even afford a time to think of crazy ways to commit murders just for self-gratification. We're a third world country, so we're mostly busy hustling, some doing different jobs just to provide food on the table. So most Filipinos just don't have time and planning to commit the perfect crimes. Also, the law enforcement here in the Philippines is very poor. The police work in the Philippines is so poor that even if there are serial murders, they probably can't connect the dots. And lastly, there may be serial killers, but since they don't get as much publicity, especially in provincial places, we don't really know about them. Media attention is mostly focused on Metro Manila, the capital of the country. So the killings that happen in the provinces are not that well known. So for some of these crimes, they just eventually become urban legends. Maybe there are no serial killers in the Philippines now, given the situations and reasons I've just mentioned. But let's try to remove these factors. What if Marites is not yet existing? What if, even though we don't have basements, the person has a large place to hide bodies and weapons? What if they're not from this era, but from before the establishment of the police. Can a serial killer exist? So, of course, I did some quick research of serial killers in the Philippines, and it gave me just one name. The first and the only documented serial killer in the country. And he's a priest. His name is Father Juan Severino Malyari, a priest during the Spanish colonial period in the Philippines. Spanish colonial period in the Philippines is between 1521 to 1898, so yes, that's more than 300 years of colonization of our country. I decided to feature Father Juan Severino Malyari because I think he's the perfect topic for this very special pilot episode. Because aside from he's the first documented serial killer in our country, he's also a proof that serial killers might exist in the Philippines. So he definitely deserves this spot. Now that I've introduced him, let's jump right to his story that travels back to 1800s. Father Juan Severino Malyari, or let's just call him Father Juan, is actually from Macabebe, Pampanga in the Philippines. Nothing much is known from his childhood, but I read one source that he had a complicated relationship with his mother, but there are no details as to why they cite this. We'll get back to the discussion about his mother later. All we know about Father Juan, aside from his hometown, is that his family must have been well off enough to send him to Manila and study. He took theology as a bachelor's degree and graduated from the University of Santo Tomas. After graduation, he went on to become a priest. He was ordained in 1809, and after his ordination, he was appointed as the assistant parish priest of Gapan, Lubao, and Bacolor. These are all municipalities in Pampanga. Later on, he would have to compete with other priests, which are predominantly Spanish, to preside over the parishes in Urani, Mariveles, and Lubao, all still in Pampanga, but he was always rejected. Main reason on his rejection is because he is a Filipino. Eventually, in 1816, that 7 years from the year he was ordained, he was assigned as a full-fledged parish priest in Magalang, just a few kilometers away from his hometown in Pampanga. He was the first ever Filipino parish priest assigned in the town, and of course, he was welcomed warmly by the townspeople, especially by the Filipinos living in Magalang. Father Juan, we can say, is definitely an intelligent person. Aside from being a dedicated priest, he also excels in calligraphy. In fact, he was the second Filipino who has mastered the art of calligraphy after his contemporary Father Anselmo Fajardo. And there are documentations of his works. His works were mostly vines of flowers and angels on clouds, which can be considered as folk art. His calligraphy can be found on his parish annual reports. When you see one of the sample of his works, you can definitely see the intricate designs, proving that he's artistically genius. So who would have thought that a devout priest and an exceptional artist like him will later commit horrific crimes, right? But then, during his tenure in Magalang, which was from 1816 to 1826, there were mysterious disappearances in the town. And one by one, the missing townspeople were found, but they were found as lifeless bodies. The people living in the town soon realized that they're not just facing mysterious disappearances, but string of murders happening in their beloved town. Of course, this has raised fear among the community as they didn't even know why this was happening and they had no idea who the perpetrator was. This was the first time they were experiencing this, so for sure, both Filipinos and Spaniards living in the town were afraid. The Guardia Civil that time just kept on discovering bodies after bodies in a span of a decade. They discovered a total of 57 murdered people of Magalang. That's an average of one person killed every 2 months from 1816 to 1826. Nobody knew the motive. And no one had a clue, so they had no means to connect the murders to a killer or killers. There are also no details on how these 57 people were killed. Since it's the 1800s, Documentation on murders is not as advanced as what we have now. I tried to search for the names of the victims to pay respect by mentioning their names on this podcast, but unfortunately, I cannot find any records on this. But please know, these people are not just mere numbers. They were real people who were innocent and got killed. So all of these cases remained unsolved until one day in 1826, Father Juan had fallen ill to an unknown disease, and another priest was sent to Father Juan's home so he can take care of him while he was sick. During this time, the murders also stopped. The community must have felt relief, knowing that they won't wander on the streets in fear. But on one of the visits of the priest assigned to take care of Father Juan, he stumbled upon bloodied weapons and belongings of those townspeople who disappeared. He kept belongings of those he murdered, possibly as a trophy. We now know that this is a characteristic of a serial killer, but of course, no one knows at the time. The term serial killer wasn't even coined until 1900s and was officially used by the FBI in 1970s. So we can only imagine the shock on the priest's face when he discovered the weapons full of blood and the things Father Juan took home as trophies. He probably cannot believe that a servant of God would commit such sin. So just imagine the reaction of the residents of Magalang when they heard this. Imagine you lost a loved one and you heard that the priest assigned at your town killed them. And when you went to the priest's house to confirm, you saw probably a ring or anything that you knew belonged to your loved one who was killed, along with the other blooded belongings and weapons used for the killing. They were probably shocked and in disbelief. They can't believe that their parish priest, whom they accepted and loved dearly, was capable of committing murders. As soon as this was reported to the Spaniards, he was arrested and imprisoned like any regular prisoners. They basically did not care that this person they arrested had a significant position in the church. Everyone wondered why this devout priest killed so many people. Who wouldn't be curious, right? He's a respected priest, a brilliant one, if I may add, and everybody in town looked up to him. There are two theories as to how he was able to kill such a number of people. First theory is that the mysterious disappearances happened with the help of his minions. These minions helped him in kidnapping victims. Another theory is that he acted alone, but his motivation in trying to either avenge or seek atonement for his very dysfunctional relationship with his mother fueled him in plotting the killings. When put to trial and asked for his motive in killing these people, he said that his mother was sick. There are no reports on what his mother's illness was or if she was really ill at all, but that was his defense. His mother was sick, and the disease was caused by dark incantations. He believed that his mother was bewitched by an unknown sorcery, or quote-unquote nakulam in Filipino. Kulam is believed to be the doings of a witch that can bring diseases and even death to people. The witches, or mangkukulam, are said to use dolls, and they prick those dolls with magic pins to bring pain to the person. So Father Juan believed this is what his mother is experiencing, and that the only way to save his mother was to kill these people. He was convinced that it was his mission to kill these people and save his mother. The Spanish chronicler Sinelbato de Mas wrote, and I quote, "The attorney on this case talked in pathetic terms of indescribable and barbarous prodigality of bloodshed by that monster," end quote. After 14 years of incarceration, he was then sentenced to death by hanging in 1840, making him the first Filipino priest executed by the Spanish colonial government, way before the execution of the Gumburza in 1872. However, Dr. Luciano Santiago, a psychiatrist and historian who wrote the book The Kapampangan Pioneers of Catholic Church, argued that Father Juan suffers from severe psychosis and should have been taken to a mental institution. Dr. Santiago said that Father Juan was a victim of injustice because during that time, the Spaniards had established a mental institution called Hospicio de San Jose in the Philippines. And reportedly, Spaniards also established the very first mental hospital in Spain, making them the pioneers of mental health. Going back to Hospicio de San Jose, it is said that this institution was already operating for 15 years when they discovered the killings of Father Juan. And according to Dr. Santiago, Father Juan should have been taken there instead of the prison because he was deemed mentally ill based on numerous psychological tests. Instead, the Spaniards did not consider his case as a murderous psychosis, but as an example of, I quote, the Indios' natural tendency to believe all the ghost stories they were fond of telling, end quote. These colonizers really think we are of a lower level than them, no? Father Juan cannot plea the insanity defense since there was no such thing in court before. He can only accept the verdict of hanging. What do you think? Did Father Juan deserve his death, especially with the fact that he killed 57 people? Or do you agree with Dr. Santiago that he should have been brought to the mental institution to be treated? Is he really a monster? Or was he just mentally ill to the point that he cannot control himself and kill these people? Me? I guess he should have been checked even before the murders happened. For sure, there were signs that could have told that he was mentally ill. But given the situation that time, for sure, the perception on mental health was different, at least among Filipinos. But the Spaniards should have known better, right? Given that they were able to establish a mental institution means they acknowledge the existence of mental illness. But since Father Juan is a Filipino, they must have ignored all the signs showing his mental illness. But that doesn't reduce the gravity of the fact that he killed 57 people, people who are innocent and have their own families and loved ones. And even though there are no records about them, it is important to remember these unnamed individuals and honor their memories. What about you? I'll leave it up to you to think about. And that ends our pilot episode. If you like this episode, please rate and make sure to subscribe and click the follow button. This podcast is available in Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Stitcher. I also just created an email and Instagram and Twitter account. Our email is monstersamongus2022@gmail.com and @monstersamongu5, as in the number 5, on Instagram and Twitter. So if you like this first episode, please follow the Instagram and Twitter accounts. I'll be posting Father Juan's calligraphy there, and also I'll be posting updates there on the following episodes as well. And if there's a case you want me to cover, you can email me. Again, it's monstersamongus2022@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you on the next episode for another true crime story. Bye!